Welcome to Keith and the Girl. I'm Keith Malley.
I'm Hamda. Thanks for listening.
We, of course, have this show 5 days a week, but you don't live just 5 days a week, do you? You live longer, so you need a Saturday show. Download My Opening Line at myopeningline.com, and boom, you get your sixth show. That easy. We talk to comedians and actors about their very first times performing. It's always mortifying, it's humiliating, it's embarrassing, and you're going to love it, all right? Looking at some reviews right now from iTunes, give it 5 stars, say hi. Tom writes, Keith and Hamda talk to comedians about their first times on stage and all the embarrassment that goes along with it. Just got done listening to episode 1 where Emma Willman performs behind a kitchen counter after receiving the intro. So, Emma's going to tell her joke now. Don't miss out on this. It's a beautiful ball of funny and sadness all wrapped into one.
It's myopeningline.com. Thank you so much for reviewing it. We appreciate it.
Alyssa says, not only a great concept, but a great execution. Keith and Hamda are fabulous in every incarnation, so I knew I'll be getting another awesome show with My Opening Line. I was not disappointed. Now stop reading reviews and go listen. So thank you very much. Senior Loomis says, Keith and Hamda have been producing some of the best quality podcasts for longer than podcasting has been a thing. This show is no exception. 5 out of 5. 5 out of 5.
Thank you.
Very fun to hear. MyOpeningLine.com. You're going to love the guests. You're going to love their stories. Ladies and gentlemen, speaking of being mortified, today's guest has the Mortified podcast and then created the Netflix series, The Mortified Guide. Dave Nadelberg. How you doing, Dave?
Hi. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Congratulations, by the way, first
Thanks.
Off. And what happens is you'll have live shows, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, now, of course, it's a TV series where people are on stage reading their diaries and not thinking they're ever going to grow up out of all this angst. Some do, some don't.
Right. Reading their teenage diaries.
Right. Yeah. And it is illuminating. It's very exciting. And I think when you read a diary, do you kind of think somebody's going to find it?
Anyway,
it's kind of ready for performance, everybody's diaries.
I feel like that's how I ended up writing quote poetry, because I would write in, it wasn't poetry to me, but I wrote it like it was because I was writing it in code to me, you know, it was like, oh, my heart aches for, you know, just generally whoever. And so I think mine is a ridiculous, ridiculous diary where instead of writing stories and dear diary, this happened today, because I always wanted to do that. Like, I wanted to do like regular teenage shit so bad all the time. And I think that's why I made out with whoever I made out with. Like, I'm just like, I'm supposed to be doing this. Let's make out. Let's go. So I wanted to write the diary thing, but I was like, today I went in. I was like, who cares? I already did that. Why would I want to know this later in my life? So I just started writing weird non-haiku haikus.
Well, now that everybody's transparent, write your diary as if you'll be on TV with it. It will not help you mentally, but you will look like a superstar. Do people seem to... Do you have to catch them, Dave, that they're tricking your diary? Their diary? For example, I read the book The Heroin Diaries by Nikki Sixx, and he wrote this for 1 year while he was on heroin, and I don't believe it.
Because it's so motivating.
He is so fucking funny on heroin. As he's describing dying, literally. Do you find people are like, I don't believe you really wrote that?
One of my favorite things about Mortified is, so after a stage show or an episode of our podcast or TV or whatever we're doing, we get a lot of feedback of like, that was so funny. And then there's that one person who goes, but that one segment or that one story that we heard, the one diary or poem or whatever, that was made up, right? Or like you guys rewrote it. And I'm always fascinated because you think things, it's strange just how weird children are when they write. And it's actually kind of inspiring that they are, but it's really hard to fake this stuff. Occasionally, I've been doing Mortified for 15 years, and occasionally we find something that we're like, it doesn't sound real. And within those, we do whatever kind of investigation one can do.
Will you? Like, you'll look up, was Blossom on TV during that time? Mm. Will you do stuff like that?
I don't understand that logic, but yes.
Will you say, hey, okay, you said the blah, 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 full moon. Let's check if there was a full moon that day.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
You check the references.
Yeah. Right.
You put little asterisks and then you cite your work.
Right.
The real way to do it is you just kind of go, you know, I'd love to take a look at the diary. I just kind of love seeing the aesthetic. Now, that's not untrue. It's really kind of cool to see that. And sometimes we do like to see it. But really, it's you would not go through the effort of faking an entire book because you'd have to be there's not enough reward to be in Mortified.
Right.
And we purposely do it that way so that, like, you're not why would you go through a crazy amount of effort?
Have you caught someone?
There's been, I think, one person in the history that we're fairly confident was, and so we just didn't put it in. And the other people are people who I think the things were real, but like there was a guy years ago, and this guy, I think this was totally real. I don't believe he faked this. There was a guy named Ryan who performed with us, and he read this entry that was all about like cutting his pubic hair, and his mom walked in. And it's something about it was just too perfect. And we did whatever investigation we could, but we're like, you know what?
Let's talk to his mom.
Well, it was more that, it was more that the audience, if the audience doesn't buy it, then, and so like we tried different things where like we had him start the thing. We're saying, look, and I was a really precocious kid. So like I really wrote in a very sophisticated kind of way, but for whatever reason, we just said, I can't figure out a way to make this believable, even though I know this is real. And I think it just begs more questions than it answers. So
you got to add dumb, you know, teenage language. Like, you know, I heard you mention if the word so, and then the descriptor,
then you'll buy it.
Yeah. Then it's good. So just add a bunch of like, oh my God. And holy shit. Too many exclamation points, ... a lot. Or am I just showing you what's in mine?
I was cutting near my pubis. Like, all right.
Not enough pubis references. So here's a weirdly controversial topic that I'm gonna introduce here because of all this. Okay. So a couple of years ago, I went to Amsterdam. Oh, also, we're doing we have a Mortified TV show coming out later this year. Dutch language in Holland, which is crazy.
Gaat het met jullie?
What does that mean?
How are you?
Oh, I can say ellipses. ... which is puncha puncha puncha.
Okay, so you're not going to translate this, right? Other people do that.
Yes, we help. Yeah, so I was involved. So I went to Holland, and I went to the Anne Frank house because, you know, I'm sure. Known. My life is about diaries, and how could I not? This is the most famous diary of all time.
You know, when he said Anne Frank, and why would I not? I'm like, yeah, it's a piece of history. He's like, well, she had a diary. I'm into diaries.
She had the ultimate diary.
She had the ultimate. So like I was
in
like,
my line of business, this is the utmost.
I heard there are dirty, no joke. There are dirty sex jokes in this Diary of Anne Frank. When you read that in the news recently, are you like, oh my God, get my hands on those pages.
I did see that article of the newly uncovered things. But so here's what's crazy. So when you're reading the Anne Frank diary, because by the way, it's the most amazing museum I've ever been in my entire life. I thought it was a really beautiful experience. And I bought the book after.
Isn't that funny? The diary of a little girl who's hiding from people who are going to kill her is the best museum out there. We literally uncovered an entire species of animal that is never coming back. Movies have been made upon it, but oh, the words in this little girl's diary.
What am I going to relate to? A mastodon? But I can relate to trying to hide from people. I get that.
You know what? The dinosaurs probably tried to hide in one way or another.
That's what I was going
to
say. Like, all museums are usually depictions of awful things that are now like, oh, this is, I'm learning.
But after you read more, or you're in person, so you get, you know, the vibe, the spirit. In the walls. Do you think she would have been a believer? A fan of the great Justin Bieber, if you had to say?
I'm trying to remember. I think that's awesome, but wait, did he say that? Are you referencing that he did say that?
Didn't he write it in the thing?
He wrote it in the guest book. He's like, oh, and the great spirit, great person, definitely would have been a believer.
She would have loved me.
She would have loved him.
I think, you know what? I think he was not lying. I think he was probably...
No, he's always telling the truth.
Well, okay, I'll get to the controversial part about her diary in a second, but I will say this. People don't realize... like, I read it a little bit in like Hebrew school growing up. Like, you know, it was just this obligatory thing you had. And I don't really remember much about it. So then I revisited it as an adult. And I will say, Anne Frank is hilarious.
Yeah.
She's a really funny writer, and she's a really smart kid. And I read this version that's like,
wait until Conan goes to this. Oh, I definitely would have had her on my staff.
Like, is she, there's a lot of really clever jokes in there. It's just, I don't know. It's like, I did not expect that, because I think what you think of is the Holocaust thing, but of course she's not in the Holocaust. She's in this attic hiding out, right. And she's just a kid, and she's writing about the things that she's interested in. And then every once in a while it's like, oh shit, the Nazis. And which was the alternate title for
right.
for the release of the book.
What a great review.
Oh shit.
Every once in a while it's oh shit, the Nazis.
So I find it, if you've not read this book, it is a very moving book, but I love the humanity in dark places, the humor in dark places. And I think there's a lot of it. But to your question about things that are fabricated, there are few people in the world, like very few people, who like read a lot of teenage diaries. I happen to be one of them. For whatever weird reason, this has become my thing.
Isn't that the creepiest thing you could say about your adult life?
Oh, for sure.
That's not the sentence you wanted to describe your career.
I think, did I used to say that on my, like, back when I was like dating? I think on my dating app profiles, it might have said I read little girl diaries for a living. I probably didn't use the word little girl.
You're on a date and you're like, I'd love to read your diary. And I'm like, you know what? I think I'm comfortable
I'm good.
No. When you were a kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know all,
and I need to be naked while doing
it. Right, I know all their favorite ice creams.
So, you know, I know when things sound odd.
Right.
And I will say, my experience of reading her journal, a lot of sort of flags go off in my head of like, that seems weird. Now, again, I know that teenagers write weird, and every once in a while you meet a really smart, sophisticated, precocious kid. But there are odd things in that diary that are, they beg some questions. And I raised that to a friend, and they were like, you know,
we have four pure things in this world, you piece of shit.
Yeah, exactly. Well, apparently there is like an anti-Semitic, like, you know, Holocaust denier, like people who, I guess that's not a huge thing, but a small faction of people who are like, oh, the diary's a lie because of everything's a lie. I don't think that the diary is a lie, but I do think, so the dad and an editor found the diary,
editor found the diary?
The dad brought it to a book publisher, and they worked on the diary. And then of course it's translated into various languages, so things get kind of changed in that process. But I do wonder, in the editing, I don't know, did certain things kind of get left? There's not a lot of, I guess, tangents in her diary. And that's what struck me. Like, there was a lot of, it always stayed for a 13-year-old girl. That was like very,
I was on track. It followed a path. I can't imagine my parents finding a diary of mine, turning it in because of some catastrophic or important event, and not taking the time to go, yeah, I think we should change this sentence.
Of course, because I imagine when I was younger, I didn't want to have people my age around my parents, because they would do normal teenage things and my parents would have a heart attack over everything. Like, if I had a couple girls in the car with me, I'm talking about like the age of 12, you know, or just like, oh my God, he's cute, he talked to me, whatever. I would be mortified, because my mom, as soon as everybody left, would be like, this is how whores talk, you know, who is it that you found cute? Who is it that they're talking about? Like, what's your relationship with them? So I can't imagine my mother reading, like, I am severely lusting after this guy, I hope to see his cock, like, in the near future. And my mom being like, here, everybody. This, right. My daughter was hiding from Nazis for a while, but historically, this will really do it for you.
Now, she doesn't know when it's come and when it's pee, but please be respectful.
Right. Yeah.
What's weird also about her diary is she went back, she wrote, so there was some radio contest that was not, I don't know if it's a contest, but they were like, everybody who's listening, you should write down what's happening in your life and be a reporter. So she was like, you know, so that's what
encouraged.
So she was kind of writing with an audience in mind. So partially that helps it make sense to me. And then she went back. This is what's really interesting. She went back after she was done writing her diary and rewrote it herself. So there was like, because she wanted to make it better.
Right.
And so it's just like really.
While she was hiding?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I don't know when else that would have been.
Right. Good point, Hamza.
It got dark. Dead children.
Well, maybe she's a writer, you know? I mean,
she is. I do think she's a very brilliant writer. And I think of all the diaries to have found, we are lucky that there is that one.
Do you save all your text messages, all the AIM chats? You can easily, back in the day, press a button and it makes a document of them. Do you love the history of you and people you talk to? And if anybody dated you, we have to assume you kept our cards.
I am.
Are you a hoarder?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a personal hoarder. Not as obsessive, I think, as you're asking, but I do have that relationship to the past that I think comes from my mom, who just like saved way too much. And so I'm like a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox of her, where it's what like kind not of, as intense.
What kind of stuff did she save? Like bags from the supermarket or?
Like, we weren't allowed to eat food in the house because it was always, we're saving it for some point. And literally you would open the cabinet and there'd be food in there that has been there for 18 years.
Oh, wow.
Like, you know, and it was like anything. And she's like, no, don't open that because, and
who were you waiting for? The Messiah?
I don't know. Yes, I think so.
Eliyahu every year. Exactly. Elijah. Sorry.
Thank you for correcting.
I brought my foreign weirdness into this show.
She didn't want to talk about Anne Frank's diary and then all of a sudden offend, you know?
But yeah. So, and actually in our TV show, in the Mortified Guide, there is, so Mortified isn't just diaries, but it's often thought of as a show where people read their teenage diaries, but
they'll read the diaries, then maybe you'll cut to animation, then you'll do an interview with them on the side. Sure. Get a little more real.
But we also do poetry, and we do, in fact, in the series, we have like somebody reading aloud their old AOL chats. Cool. And even on our podcast, we've done that, and we've done emails and live journals. And so the whole world of childhood artifacts is sort of fair game. And at some point in the future, I'm sure it will be Snapchats.
Right.
It's what I find interesting now is, so my nephews all have a legit timeline where we have one picture of us sitting down somewhere that, you know, they have, here's what I looked like day one, week one. And, you know, my in-laws are really good about it. They sit them in front of blocks at week one, week two, week three. So you can actually see, we have videos of them. We captured them walking for the first time. So for the first time, you could see your actual history. You could see your development. You could see, we only know stories like, oh, your first word was this, or when you used to talk, or when you used to dance. Now it's going to be like, we can show you your entire timeline. That's
right.
So nuts.
And you have Kyle on, for example, and he says, I thought I was a dog since I was a little kid. Now you can go prove it. You know what I mean? He'll have video from when he was a kid thinking he was a dog.
That's true. We just went, my husband is a trans male, and we just went to LA, and he, part of his upbringing was there, I think, until he was like 7 years old. So he had these really close younger friends at the time, and he remembers his childhood very well. So there were these two girls that he spent a lot of time with, and I was watching them revisit their history, and they were saying things to him like, yeah, whenever we played, you always wanted to be Ken, or you always insisted on being like the male this, and they made up, all three of them had different alternate names for each other, like just nicknames that were just regular names, and his was Max, you know, and it was all these signs showing. Then he visited his grandma, who hasn't seen him since he started transitioning, so that was a very big deal. And she goes, yeah, this makes sense, because you always said things like, you know, when I become a big boy, this, that, and the next. And so, yeah, we're gonna have video and just like regular chatter. We're gonna have podcasts for little kids.
I'm often really fascinated by, you know, the preservation, not to, you know, older generations, they just have photographs. You know, I found some home movie footage of my dad, but it's 8mm, so there's no sound, but I can see how he moved. Mm. You know, most of my parents have passed away. And so you see through the past, through media from the past, of, you can see their personalities, and you can see, not just like, oh, dad worked at this job, or dad lived here, or mom, you know, had a sister or had brown hair, or like, those are all things that get told to you. But like, when you see and you can hear, or if you can read anything that they wrote, I always encourage people, like, even if you're not interested in Mortified, go home and either dig up something you wrote or find anything you can any kind of artifact, and I use that word because I do think it's sort of very like archaeological, like you're looking at an ancient civilization that has its own language and rituals and all that stuff.
Yeah, a lot of words we're not allowed to say anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And
you could see the notions in their face. Stop it.
And it's just really, it's really powerful. And so I like finding that those old footage and all that and making use of it.
Me too. My parents started digitizing some of their stuff, so it got funneled to me. They don't talk to me, but I found it anyway. And I saw their wedding, and it was silent. But you can see. I forgot that you used to do this. You would get married, and then on the way to the hall, like, you would have to stand there, you and your new husband, to greet every single person. And so you would have to, they would be coming in the line, you would be saying hi to everyone, meeting every single person. And I'm watching my mother do that, and I see in her face, she's so happy. Well, she was so in love with my dad. And they were, and you can see, it's like you said, it's in silent, but my dad walks very, he's got a very cocky walk, and he's always sort of been like that. He's been sort of a big shot, and it's part of why she fell in love with him. And she's so into it. They're so into the whole thing. Like, they got dressed up, and she's like looking at him like, look at him, he looks so good in a suit. Like, they're so excited about it.
We're the same age. How'd your parents pass away?
He's trying to I still have my parents. What happened to you?
Well, I'm curious if I gotta give him a call or something, you know.
Tell them not to get cancer.
Okay.
Tell them really, like, just whatever you do, don't get. My mom passed away from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Ouch.
What a weird name for something. Non-anything you can die from.
Well, my dad had an even weirder name. It was like a cancer you've never heard of called...
testes.
Large cell neuroendocrine.
Okay.
Is that in the brain?
Like, no celebrities have had it, so there's no catchy name for it.
Who had it first?
She did, and she passed away, and then she was sick for 10 years. And then we were the type of family that, did not acknowledge it, like did not talk about it, did not emote, did not like, I never spoke to my mom, like barely spoke to my mom about cancer. And it's a huge regret of mine.
You want to talk to her about? Like, what were the things that, cause when you say didn't want to talk about it, in 10 years, it becomes, I imagine, normalized. And so you're talking about other things, and instead of like, I ache here, or I'm going into what?
Sure. I wasn't very emotional. I don't think I was very emotionally mature at the time. Like, I don't think it was, now I like to tell people I love them. I like to, I like to be more open and confront things. And like she and I had a kind of a complicated relationship, so I wish that I could have spoken to her about that. I didn't get that chance, even though I had 10 fucking years of like red flags being like, you know, she has cancer, but I always thought her cancer was like how Magic Johnson has HIV. Right. It's like, yeah, but you don't really have.
Yeah.
It's like, you're fine. And that's what I was like, you go to the hospital for check-ins every like year, 2 years, and like, oh, you get to say you have cancer, but like, that's just for sympathy points. Like, that's the asinine thinking that I went through.
I honestly think that's how I see and saw my dad's cancer, because he was in pain, and then he got the diagnosis, and then he went into the hospital, and no, he hasn't been the same, but he's walking around and the tests keep showing clear. So I'm like, man, you know, well, I had a tumor, we're fine.
Yeah. And that is the reality with my dad kind of regrouped his life and many years later. And then he got remarried, which is great. We wound up, and unfortunately I think about 6 months into that marriage.
Oh.
Yeah. He gets a diagnosis, and it's not the kind of diagnosis that like my mom got where it's like, you'll be fine. It was like, yeah, this thing is pretty aggressive, and you could get like 9 months to like 3 years.
That's always weird.
And he got the low end of that spectrum. And
how long? 9 months then?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
How did you guys live the last 9 months? Was it? Say like, oh, you're gonna live it like you don't have any more time left, but you're gambling because all of a sudden you live 10 years and you've been living like a crazy person.
And also, what if you're wrong and he survives, and then you're like, God damn it, I just spent all this time with you for no reason.
But for him, he's broke, but the good news is he can live. You know?
Yeah.
No, but he was great because he pulled us aside and he said, this is what's happening. This is what's going to happen with my, you know, house and all the things. And like, we were actually talking about it and I was like, oh, this is so much better. And then I like, and then I started interviewing him. I still have the interviews. Like I would just take out my iPhone. I recommend anybody do this, even if their parents are not sick, and just ask questions that you normally wouldn't think to ask.
Oh, I'm dying to do that. My parents shut me down all the time. I don't want to talk about it. You know, next time my dad gets diagnosed with something, it's on.
Well, you can, I mean, I've actually been hired even to do it. Like, cause sometimes like it's awkward for the child to do it. But, and so like you can ask a friend to sort of do it, but if it's for a project, I find emotionally stunted parents, can be more like, oh, well, it's okay. It's not about me or my emotions. It's for some project. Yeah. Right. So I think I told my dad that. And so I talked to him about like, tell me about growing up in New York as a kid and tell me about, you know, do you believe
grew up in New York?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, was that great to hear about?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All the stories and, you know, that magical era of that's like depicted in so many Neil Simon plays of like Jews and Italians.
Yeah. What was his big secret that you were like, oh, thank you for telling me, like that you were surprised by that he never would have told you?
I don't remember anything as specific as that, but I remember.
But apparently every building was a speakeasy.
Yeah. I remember him telling me about like, his fears of childhood, like he going to like scary movies and then I guess you left your bike unlocked back then, like at the movie theater, there was just like a bike area. And like, he was always terrified to go collect his bike after a movie because he would go see like some movie like The Thing and the, you know, not the John Carpenter version, right. Or Them or something, and some big monster movie. And he would go to the basement where you collect the bike from the cinema. And it was like, he was like, I was afraid the blob was going to get me. And so like stories like that. And then, but I asked him things like, you know, like, do you believe in heaven? Like
did he?
You know what? I think he says, so did I ask him about God? Either way, I think the answer was sort of, well, I think the answer was ultimately no, but like, or like in that new age kind of way, not that he was a new age person at all, but like,
but that it doesn't matter.
Your energy. I don't know. Yeah.
I would like honest answers from my parents, you know, my dad, namely, you know, do you believe in God? He's like, you know what?
Yeah.
Sorry I put you through all that. No, no, I don't. It's just an easy way to not parent. So I apologize. You then hand your dad a wig, say, I want to ask mom questions.
Oh,
Jesus.
Right? Because you realize how great this is. When you clean up their house, they pass away, you guys put everything in order. Are you hoping you're going to find a diary?
Well, that is odd that you say that.
Is it?
I did not know this.
Wait, were you asking this knowing?
Kind of this challenging if it's odd or not.
No, it's to me, it's like, of course, people are going to ask you about diary finding.
Oh. Well, a very big moment in my life. It's actually in a little bit of this story is in our movie, Mortified Nation. But so basically after my mom passed away, I found a stack of sheets like next to her bedside and we're cleaning up the house and all this stuff. And it was just me and my dad at this point in the house. All the family had kind of gone home after the funeral stuff. And I found this stack of paper. I'm like, what is this? Some sort of like essay. It's printed on the computer paper. And he grabs it and then starts reading it. And he breaks down and he starts crying. And he's like, oh my God, this is mom. She had a diary, I guess. And it was on computer paper, which means like, why would you print this up and put this out on your bedside? Like, this is something should be stored in the, you know, in another room in the computer. And so she had gone in for a procedure that was to save her life. And it was actually a successful procedure, a stem cell thing. and transplant. And it was a success, except she got, it depletes your immune system and she got pneumonia. And so that's really what did her in. And there's a small chance that you could not make it. And so I think, knowing that that small chance existed, she leaves this diary out. And the diary, sort of a diary, and then it's also kind of like a letter to her, to those who've been left behind.
Right.
It's sort of, it's a little bit of both. And
did you read the whole thing?
I couldn't read it because of Mortified. I'll get to when I eventually did, but like I couldn't read it at first because something that I've learned about diaries over the years is that one of the reasons that people laugh or enjoy diaries in my silly, funny comedy show, Mortified, is that like it's this time trial, it's this trick that when you hear somebody's words back then that are written in the present tense that are like, you know, today I did this, but they don't know that today I did this was, they don't know that 30 years have passed when they're, that teenager just doesn't know time has marched on and that whatever shitty thing happened to them that week didn't actually kill them and that they won't even remember the whoever's in the entry, you know, who bullied them or whatever. And so I know that, you know, it makes the past feel very present. And I think it's that mind trick that when you're listening to the Mortified podcast or reading one of our books or watching our TV series, like, and you hear the diaries from people on stage, like you're like, I think that's why it's fun. But in this case, I'm reading my mom's thing and I know she's dead. And I'm like, I don't like this mind trick because I'm trying to wrap my head around the fact that she's gone. And I couldn't even look at it. And,
because also what's going to be so funny? Like, I think I'm going to be fine. It's like, you know, it's like, well, no, mom, thing is, it's the opposite.
Well, 6 months later, I did have a need to hear from her and I realized I have a tool. And that we all have this tool if we have any kind of bit of like our parents or family members' expression. In this case, it was writing, but it could be video. It could be anything. And it could be even like say, you know, a lot of people save the voicemails of their dead parents or whatever. So I wound up reading it. And in there was the voice of a woman who it started with like a lot of like pep talks, like I can do this. I'm going in for the big surgery tomorrow and things are going to be great, you know, and that's super upsetting to think about because you know the result while you're reading that right. didn't pan out for her.
You don't go to pages. Well, look for other pages. Yeah. How does it turn out?
Yeah. And so, but she winds up, you know, but she expresses a lot of fear at some point and that I had really never heard. Mm. And I loved that. I loved
it made
seeing
it more human.
Yeah. I loved seeing like, oh, she's a real person, you asshole, that you didn't talk to her enough.
Right. Have you looked at diaries that you weren't supposed to? A lover's, a friend's, you were in their house alone. It's tough, right?
Yeah. I've read my sister's diary when I was a nosy little brother as a kid. And it's...
Was that good or bad? Because I find that, you know, I don't want people to read my diary because I'm having momentary things in there. Like the safety of writing in your diary is that I could exaggerate. I could feel this very exaggerated emotion and then put it aside and then it won't. But if you read that, it's such a bigger deal than when I wrote it. So that's why I think it's like not good to read your lover's diary.
It's I've had two situations in my life where I've read other people's diary and I really understand how sacred they are. And I think I understood that when I was a kid, when I read my sister's, I was looking for like, I think I was just looking for like her to be like, David's a jerk.
Yeah.
Which we had a great relationship. I don't know why I thought that. But actually what I found was I found an entry where she didn't say, she said, mom and dad are being jerks. And here are the cute boys that I like. And maybe there was like somebody finger banged me. I don't know. But, but what I eventually got to was an entry about me and it was actually completely loving. And she was like, David's having trouble and like, I'm worried about him. And like, I think he's depressed and my parents are worried. And I was like, oh, and then I realized like, you know, this is a space that's just supposed to be for her. And I'm a complete jerk for violating this privacy.
And now I can't help but act a certain way, even though I'll try not to. Right? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's information that now you have to pretend you don't know.
Right.
That's eventually I told her.
You did?
Well, I mean, I think, yeah, when I started to mortify, I was like, I know you have a diary. But I mean, that was years later.
She's at a rap party. This is a great party. Thanks. Funny story.
And then, yeah, and then I did have a girlfriend. There was a breakup and, but there was a lot of unanswered questions about like, wait, why did this change? What happened? And I opened up like a drawer of mine, and in that drawer?
I wasn't there.
I don't know. Whatever it is, inside that thing was a composition book. And I was like, I don't remember. And I have composition books that are my own. So I was like, I don't remember. Why would I put this in my drawer? And I opened it up. And I opened it up to a page, and I read some entries that were like about like this person's thoughts of me. And I was like, I realized in that moment, oh, this is her diary. I didn't even know she had one. Why the fuck is it in my drawer? And I realized, I think it must've fallen from some other drawer into my drawer. Like how things fall out the back behind it, like a cupboard.
Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. What'd you find?
But I promised that I didn't do any of this on purpose.
Did you read like, you know, a few seconds longer than
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
Did it help
and
you?
It is a bad idea. It tortured me. And, yeah.
Why? It didn't clear anything up?
No. But I did go on like a manic tear of like for like a good like minute or so, and then got my senses because it was just making me feel sick. And I was like, I can't be this crazy person.
Did you learn anything?
I could be a different crazy person, but I'm not gonna be this crazy person.
You didn't learn anything. You didn't.
I learned to, you know, like it was a reminder of like respect people's privacy, and if you want to know something, ask them. But she was being sort of resistant to telling me things, so I think. That's why I felt the right to be slightly snoopy.
And what did you find that she thought of you when you did see your name?
I'm trying to think of the thing that wouldn't be violating her privacy to say. Mm-hmm. But it was, she felt very, I think there were things when we were, she just felt like really disconnected from me and very, very much not romantic to me. And it just made me feel completely sexless.
Oh, okay.
And it made me feel like, and so then when we did break up, I think I went on this tear of just sort of like reclaiming my masculinity in whatever way I,
ooh, what was that like?
That was the first time in my life that I probably like dated for a lot. And that was both terrifying and,
are you a good dater?
I became pretty good at, I don't know what good at dating is, but you mean good at picking people up or good at...
Well, you said you were about to say I became pretty good. What made you...
I think I became good at like picking people up at some point and like having conversation and...
getting that second date.
Getting that second date. You know, not always, but the first 6 months of that, because like it was in my mid-30s and my early 20s, I didn't really date that much. And then I was in sort of like various long-term relationships. And then this was the first time I was like, I don't want to be in long-term. Like, I should
fuck around.
Yeah.
Did you fuck around?
I did.
Did you like it?
You know, I think yes. For a time that was very healthy and good. And then for a time it's sort of unhealthy and, you know, everybody deserves a slutty phase at some point. But it was,
do you feel comfortable with that time in your life?
I will say I learned so much about myself through dating in that time of my life. It was actually so transformative because you're on these like, you know, tons of essentially job interviews, you know, mm-hmm. and you're talking to people and you start to see, or maybe you get into like a 2 month relationship with somebody and like you start learning like how people perceive you and like you start realizing, oh, this is how I'm annoying or this is how I'm helpful to people. Or
is that what you're learning, Keith, on dates?
I understand that. It's almost, yeah, it's like you're also checking out these different jobs and seeing what you like with each company and seeing what you're compatible with each company. And of course, because you're simply older, you're learning what you want.
Yeah.
You're learning what you wanted and didn't admit to, all this kind of stuff.
It was It was, I will say this, it was absolutely terrifying. I don't know how long you've been.
I'm in the middle of it right now and I'm enjoying it.
When you began, were you like, I was terrified for the first 6 months, like trying to talk.
I didn't think anybody would like me.
Yeah. It's just
and why not, Keith? Because people, I mean, you have this show and people clearly like you. You know what I mean? Like you have a personality that you can sell. Do you know what I mean? So why
because you asked, because you ask one person out, all right, I'm ready to date, and they say no, and you're like, I knew it.
Okay.
But you know, when you're not in a head like that, and you know, no matter who you are, it's gonna happen. You know, that's why it's laughable when people say how tough it is. It's like, you just wait, and the next thing you know, you're gonna have too much.
Yeah.
But not to sound like an asshole, but you will. And then, you know, everybody does, and then you pick through that. Andrea's laughing in the back, but I know I'm right. She's got 6,000 dates this week, you know, because she stopped caring.
She texted,
that's the Canadian way.
Yeah.
Andrea said, my slutty phase is forever.
Well, Andrea's best friend's parents read her friend's diary, and that's how the parents learned that the brother was molesting her. So do we read these diaries or not?
Did we know
this?
Did we know we were going there in that moment?
Whoa.
So do we read a diary or not?
No, we don't. I'll tell you why. Okay. I think that we used to hide so much, like you and your mom didn't talk about anything, and we're talking about cancer, which should be an easy thing to talk about. It's very black and white. Yeah. You get news from a doctor, it's biological. It's like all this stuff is very clear, and we're still not looking at it. And what used to happen is incest and molestation, we used to blame the kid and get really mad at him for making his uncle look like whatever and all that stuff. I think if you learn about your kids, you can see the shift in their face, the shift in their personality, where is that a teenage thing or is that something the fuck just happened to your kid? And I think that you could learn that without a diary. That being said, I read lover's thing, so yeah. I would probably read my kid's thing if I saw an alert. Like if a red flag went up, it's like you said, you seem like a very decent person. You understand the weight of reading somebody's diary. And yet when curiosity got so big, when you knew that you weren't getting information or getting false information or people are lying.
Are you cheating on me? All these kind of things.
All of that stuff, I think you become justified and you do read it. So if I saw that my kid was suddenly acting shifty and I'm really not getting... So at first I said no, but yes, if it comes down to, I see something's wrong, I might be able to change this. I don't want to do this, but I can't say 100% that I won't look. Because
the challenge with that is, of course, everyone who does violate somebody's privacy has their own justifications.
And gets justified because you'll always find something.
You'll get it because you'll be like, I have the right to, you know, to break this law,
it's about me, right?
Yeah, because I got this reason. And it's like, and so that's where it becomes a personal thing of like, is this about my pettiness or is this genuine? Like, am I crossing? So you got to figure out the line of when you're crossing the line to.
I make a fake diary that I kind of hide, but it's in the stove, you know, anybody can find it. And it talks about how much I love who I'm dating right now and that it's fun that I can trust them completely and they would never look at my diary.
We literally have people doing that in Mortified. They read both diaries. They read the one that they left out for their religious parents and then the one that's like super slutty where they're talking about all the things that they're doing.
Do you remember that? In 80s sitcoms, it was always that. It was always, mom read my diary, but don't worry, it was the diary that you know, she thinks is real. And it was always like under the mattress. They would hide it in a place that the parents would look for. So many 80s sitcoms had like that one episode where do I look in the kid's diary or don't? And the answer was always yes.
Do you and your stepmom still talk? Because that was so fast, that relationship, right? In a way.
We do. She's great. She's now in a new relationship. And
she didn't get the house, right? I mean, she was in and out.
Well, they were together for a couple of years.
Let's focus on the really important things. Who got the house?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't see why she wouldn't get the house. And I don't, because it's very strange when kids are like, my parents didn't give me this. What? Why are you assuming any of their shit is yours? Yeah. You didn't suck their dick.
Right? I mean, I got to read this book. Let's see. By the way, it's nice that your mom, left a couple pages when she passed away. Yeah. Is it the responsibility of all parents or lovers to, you know, leave me a couple pages. What were you thinking? Whether it's good, whether it's bad, get it off your chest. Let me, give me a clue about your life that you were too whatever to not tell me.
You know why I think it's a good thing? It's not so much for the kids, because you could argue, well, just be a grown up and talk.
Right.
But some people aren't grown up. So for that, it is good. But what it's really good for is your kids' kids, your grandkids who you might not meet, or their kids who you might not meet, whatever it is. It is not fair. I think maybe this sounds childish of me, but I don't like, it's not fair, but it's not fair of you to take away this thing from these kids who maybe don't even haven't been born yet. You're taking away this opportunity for them to get to know somebody who might be valuable for them to know, to understand how they are the way they are, because we inherit personality traits, or we, or, you know, we absorb personality traits from, you know, and so like when you're dealing with whatever you're dealing with, when you're like 16 or whatever, you're like, oh, that's totally like Uncle Mikey was always like that. And you're like, oh, and it's just helpful. And it's, it doesn't mean that that kid has to access it, but just.
Do you have that? Do you write in a diary every night?
I don't, I'm not a diary writer. I was a, I mean, I've written in diaries from time to time, but I draw more as a sort of a journaling thing. And I used to write a lot of poetry in like when I was a teenager, that was my jam. Like I was the
real poetry or Hemda poetry.
Yes.
Okay.
I wrote like terrible pretentious poetry.
Cause I don't know what qualifies words to be a poem. I tried to make it rhyme, but even when I didn't, it was just in a certain, maybe pentameter.
I'll give you a taste. There's a poem that I've done on stage at Mortified where it's like, it's like a, like I became woke at some moment, like when I was like 17, and I was like, people of the world, like, don't you know that the, that racism exists and blah, 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 blah. And then after each, there was a series of questions. And then after each one, it would say N-O. And then it was like, don't you know our environment's being destroyed and blah, blah, blah. And it was like N-O. And so it just keeps going N-O, N-O. And at the end, it says, with like, how are we going to solve all of our problems? And in the stage show, I pause and the audience is at this point saying, N-O. And I shake my head and I go, because this is what it says in the page. And it says, K-N-O-W.
You're deep.
Deep.
The fashion designer, known mostly for her bags, right? Clutches, purses. Kate Spade killed herself. And she was beloved. And I say that because I see it trending for days. Usually you're just, you know, number one for a couple hours. But they loved Kate Spade, it seems. And she had a daughter, left behind a daughter, and left a note saying, I want you to know the suicide is because of my depression. Has nothing to do with you. But adds, if you want to know what it's about, your father will know. Ask him.
That's very strange to
ask. Well, I didn't know that latter part.
Yeah.
She and the girl, from what I understood, is 13, right?
She created the must-have handbags of the 90s and turned it into an accessories empire, committed suicide in her Park Avenue apartment. Kate Spade was 55, hung herself with a red scarf. I don't know if she designed the scarf or not. Is from a doorknob. She was infatuated with the way that Robin Williams killed himself, it seems. She was found by a housekeeper at 10:10 a.m., pronounced dead a short time later. The daughter's 13, Frances Beatrix Spade, and suggested her husband, Andrew Spade, would know why she took her life. Quote, this has nothing to do with you. Don't feel guilty. Ask your dad.
Oh boy, what did dad do? I mean, that's a lot of rage towards your, what I assume is an ex, right?
And you know it's going to, no, it doesn't sound it.
They're still together?
I think they were still together. I was reading it. This happened yesterday and I was very glued to this story.
Oh no, yeah. They were still together. And you're saying he knows?
And you know this is going to the cops. This is going to be a public letter, right?
Right. Now forever he's going to have to, like, nobody knows why somebody committed suicide.
Spade's sister, Retta Safo, told the family's hometown newspaper, the Kansas City Star, that the fashion icon suffered for years with depression, but refused to get help, fearing how it would affect her brand if word got out. Meanwhile, she doesn't own the brand necessarily. Spade, born Catherine Noel Brazahan, well, that's not going to fit on a bag, leaves behind her husband, the brother of comic actor David Spade, and their daughter. She was the aunt of the marvelous Mrs. Maisel star, Rachel Brazahan. Spade moved to New York in the 1980s to work as an editor at Mademoiselle magazine and began her brand Kate Spade with a small collection of eye-catching colorful nylon handbags in 93. The company was a runaway success, with its products quickly making it into high-end boutiques and onto the arms of celebrities, and had racked up $28 million in sales by the end of 1998. They sold the majority of their empire to Neiman Marcus in 1999 for $34 million, then the rest in 2006 for another $59 million. The brand continued to boom without them, and Coach bought the company for $2.4 billion last year.
Last year.
She was always a very excitable little girl, and I felt all the stress pressure of her brand may have flipped the switch where she eventually became full-on manic depressive. Now, keep in mind, she already sold it. Now, I don't know if she gets a cut or a percent, but...
She doesn't need money. Right. Who cares about cut percent or anything? Maybe even if they stole $1 million from her a year, she'd still be fine.
She kept watching the Robin Williams videotape over and over. I think the plan was already in motion as far back as then. Andrea has a Kate Spade handbag.
A wallet.
A little wallet. And I asked, you know, are these expensive bags? And they must, you know, I figure they must be. And she said, no, the point is that in a world where a bag like this would cost $500, this is a mere $150.
Yeah, but after she explained it to us, it makes sense.
Does it really? Explain it. How does it make sense?
Okay, so $150, it's designed really well and it's not going to break.
It has a zipper. Well, you can open it and I look inside. Now, look at all this money and credit cards. So maybe if it came with that, it's $150. I would get.
Think and grow rich. See? Well, so she was explaining how for $150, if that breaks or if anything happens to it, they'll replace it for her. They'll make it right, whatever it is. And if you get a knockoff, they'll use materials or, you know, somehow build it so that it'll mess up after a month or 3 months anyway. So you can pay $50 for that, but you'll have to keep rebuying it. So, and $150 at this point, I think people our age are like, $150 for a wallet. $150 is not a lot for jeans anymore. It's not a lot for a shirt anymore. Look at Andrea. She's like, for jeans, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Well, jeans, when we were younger, were $30. Right. So we can't, because I watch Keith doing this and I'm like, I got to stop doing that because I do what he does. $150 for a wallet. It's like, yeah, but you know, when we were younger, minimum wage was like $3.50. So this is different now. And, you know, when I was, I remember I was 23 years old, a Lower East Side apartment, I was paying $525 a month. That doesn't exist in Queens, in any outer boroughs. It hardly exists upstate anymore.
Yeah, but these bags were always expensive. I bought a purse once. And I thought it was cool because it had holes in it. I thought that was the new thing. The girl I bought it for was not pleased. I you know how, like, I'll see on Facebook, it's somebody's birthday, and so just real quick, I write, you did it, and I send it to them, and that's my way of saying hi. Maybe you're a Keith and the Girl listener. Maybe you're a close friend of mine. Everybody gets the same, you did it, right?
That's fun.
So you know Janine, who I used to date, worked in a restaurant with her.
Yes.
And I saw it was her birthday, and I wrote, you did it.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes sometimes she's called Jeannie.
Yes.
Okay.
Did she think you were accusing her of something?
Right. Well, no, she didn't have to worry about it because a friend texted me saying, oh, you must not know that she's dead. So, and I'm like, oh, no. So I quickly get rid of you did it because that's some terrible timing.
Oh, my God. She was our age.
Yeah.
What happened?
I was talking to her friend, you remember, not gay, Bobby Mitchell.
Yeah.
And the guess is, and I kind of guessed this too, was pills and alcohol abuse, like a failed kidney.
Holy shit. On purpose or she missed?
It seems not on purpose necessarily.
How are you?
It was so odd. It was so odd.
Wow.
I know not too long ago she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And it doesn't surprise me. And that's good that it make, you know, not making sense made sense to her finally. But, you know, I do remember posts from her that would be living in New Orleans. Fantastic. I'm going to be the manager of this ghost tour company. My boyfriend's fantastic. And then I would look 3 days later. abusive boyfriend smashed my head into the wall. I'm getting fired. Like, and then the, 3 days later, it was the best life possible. Everything, you know, all the spirits around me. And then 3 more days later, a car ran into her and she was, you know, robbed as the police are saying, whatever. You know, is always very extremes. But yeah, I had no idea.
I'm sorry to hear that. That's
Wow. Yeah, she was, wow. You can hear, okay, so she came to your first ever recording. And you can
stand up.
Yeah. And you can hear her laugh because it's very distinct and it's loud and people mistake it for my laugh because it has that similar like,
right,
you know, like above everything. And she came not this time that we went to LA, last time to our live show. And she's one of those people that like, I'm not comfortable with it, but like I appreciate it. And I'm always, you know, like I'm always like, oh, man, I'm such a stiff. So she's very loving when she sees you. She's like, oh my God. And I'm just like, oh, I didn't know we were this close, you know? And she saw me that 5 years ago and she held my hand for like, I don't know how long because I'm so uncomfortable holding people's hands. Right. She's like, oh, good to see you. And you know, like when people like say hello and they just kind of grab your hand and then we're just standing there with our hands held and I don't know when to let go. And I'm just like, this is nice, but I don't know how to feel about it. Isn't that is that odd about me?
No, I get, well, most people aren't like that, I guess, you know, but you see somebody so warm, I guess it's, but yeah, it's odd. Like, let's get as close as possible to talk.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Janine Winner, a daughter of Bill and Lois, graduated from Tabb High School and moved to New York City to attend the American Music and Dramatic Academy. Later, she lived in various cities around the country. In Austin, Texas, she joined her sketch comedy dinner theater, Esther's Follies. Back in New York City, she became part of the state task force assisting Ground Zero workers.
Wow.
In Sarasota, Florida, she became actively involved in videoing the vote to provide a video record of voting recounts. Yeah, I remember that. She would go through garbage to try to find these voting receipts. You know, she's one of these people to make sure everything was on the up and up in this country. Most recently, she became a ghost tour guide in New Orleans with parades and music everywhere. And this reads, a perfect city for her. A celebration of her life was held, blah, blah, blah. This is back in April. Wendy, a friend of hers, says, wow, okay, so the gay bar by my house was still open when I came home. I stopped in. Dude had just boiled up some crawfish. This is in New Orleans. Wanted to get rid of them. I walked with, I don't even know how many pounds. But on my way out, an old guy asked if I had any funny blonde, quote, light of a party friends that might have just passed away. Now, whether you believe in ghosts or not, how odd is that? Yeah. Hey, do you recently have a blonde life of the party girl die in your life? It's pretty specific, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got one. He told me that she was here on my left and begging folks not to question her death. She said she wants to be remembered for exactly what we remember and not think about the last moments. I always wanted to be a sensitive, so I guess somebody that can see the other side, when I was young. The more I hear, the more I'm okay with not. Love you, Jeannie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
When did you find out about this?
Today, when I wrote happy birthday, and they went...
So today was her birthday?
Yesterday was her birthday. I sent a message yesterday, and this morning I woke up to a... Yeah, I think you know her, but...
So do you plan to, have any ritual or do any
kind of... I'm going to eat crawfish in her honor.
Is that right?
Sure.
With people who knew her?
I don't know any of these people, actually.
She's very interesting in your life because you don't really keep in touch with a lot of older people and especially people that you dated because usually you're like, yeah, we didn't get along in a very specific way enough for me to not have a reason to talk to you. And this person...
Yeah, like she's... Right, like... Right, like we went our different ways, but I always remembered her as a nice person, so we kept in touch.
Yeah, above... all your exes, she was very, you were able to somehow take what you like and leave the rest the most with her because I could see where you guys would not be compatible even as friends because she was like a little too manic for you when.
No pun, yeah.
Yeah, like actually because it's funny because everyone sees Keith as this very boisterous, loud person in public, but he actually can't deal with that with anybody around. And so, I don't know. You guys had this very interesting...
No, I feel bad, though. It's like, oh, so you decided to take what you want and leave the bipolar behind? And then she had to deal with that?
You can't help her bipolarness.
Right. Right.
Wow. I'm sorry.
But Facebook could give you fucking clues, right? Hey, this is...
Yeah.
Nobody in the family contacted Facebook in these couple months?
That's an interesting idea.
I mean, I like it, I guess, because, you know, people obviously, there are people I saw that didn't know wishing happy birthday or you want to hang out tonight. And then there's the more spiritual ones, you're having a birthday party in heaven. So maybe, you know, for those ones, it's good that they have a place to go, I suppose. But it's an odd thing in general. Yeah. What were you going to say, Dina?
Oh, well, you said something about Facebook should have alerted. Right. And, you know, it's been in the news of late of like all the data mining and all the creepy stuff that they're doing or trying to not do or whatever. And I wonder.
They should have an angel overlay.
Well, just like, no, but if you see, there's a good side of this and a super creepy side of this of like, if the algorithms and the robots of Facebook note that somebody is like super up one day and super down one day and super up one day, and there's like patterns of various things, you know, maybe there's some, I don't know who gets alerted.
Oh, that would be weird though.
It is weird. Yeah. It opens up a can of worms, but it's interesting.
But like, instead she's just been getting medication advice, you know, from the specific medication.
Yeah. The only people who are going to win is big pharma. Right. Like, hey, it looks like you need this pill.
Wellbutrin.
Well, or the FBI, if somebody is, if what they're tracing is somebody who might be violent, you know, because they keep saying how like the FBI is monitoring Facebook or whatever. And maybe maybe they do it already.
Yeah. Right.
Do.
Right. By the way, you're going through something in your building. You got a guy, what is it, like a 10 apartments in this building?
Yeah, right. So right before we started recording, I was telling you guys about there's a tenant in my building who is making death threats. He's got a bullet with your name on it.
Wait. When you say he's got a bullet with your name on it, you guys are getting a handwritten letter saying
on the public door. And the reason on the front door of the building.
That he has a bullet for every single person in there?
Well, the reason he can't be brought to justice. The cops can't do much is because that particular note was not addressed to someone specific or put on somebody's specific door.
Okay.
So I guess if you, at least in California, which is where I live, if you post something like that in a public space where it's sort of anonymous who the victim is. And I'm like, well, how about the victim is all the people who live in the building?
Yeah. How about he said he's in 4L?
He's saying like, be quiet. And it's not a loud building at all. And he's just been having a lot of signs of aggressive and hostile behavior. And so we've been dealing with police and landlords who, you know, and eviction laws. And it's kind of scary because the other night,
what constitutes a threat if having a bullet for your entire building? We've seen buildings blow up and come down and get hit and completely destroy, right? At this point, we have footage and we can easily bring it up.
I don't know what the rules are or you know what
sounds like you're about to know though.
I'm about to learn. Yeah. But so, and he's, you know, he definitely has, he's a pathological liar and, or seems to be. Because we're, you know, he's saying lots of things that just aren't true.
So people are talking to him, right?
Yeah, he's been telling the neighbors, you know, somebody, you know, attacked me the other night, like a large black guy, and he's like, look, I know in this day and age, I can't say a large black guy in a hoodie attacked me. And he's like, I'm the last racist person you'll ever meet.
Oh, it's always the last. Yeah, exactly. Racist people.
Remember when Donald Trump used to say that? He was like, I'm the least, and I'm like, you didn't have to say that.
Right.
You didn't have to go that far. I'm the least racist person you'll ever meet. Like, what's that? What's that metric, by the way?
Say top 6 million.
Yeah.
But now when somebody's making up, hey, I have, you know, I was attacked by a black person. Don't think I'm black. I have a black daughter. Like,
yeah, that's what he said.
So, but during that time you're talking, do you go, yeah, 1 second. Why do you keep threatening to kill us? Like, how are you listening to these other conversations?
Well, and he's also telling me that he's got cancer and he's to one person, he's got this cancer, and to another person, he apparently has a different cancer.
Does that make you feel, to me, it would make me feel a little more comfortable because he might be lying about the bullet also. Although, a lot of times, that's the part that ends up being the truth. Right.
I am always uncomfortable with unstable people because unstable people or people who believe themselves to be small are unpredictable in their behavior. And they need to be dealt with compassion. They are not our enemy. They are sick. So it doesn't do anybody good to have wrath. But so I've dealt with various people with mental illnesses for many, many years. And I've dealt with my own mental illnesses for years. And this is just in a situation where I'm being met with someone who's definitely showing signs of aggression and hostility and violence.
Are you
and
worried?
So yeah. Yeah.
Do you think that you might die from this?
I don't feel safe in my current living situation.
Do you have measures that you feel you should take before entering the building now?
For example, do you have measures of taking a diary?
Did you print out your diary yet?
I didn't print out my diary and leave it on a bedstand. But yeah, I don't know. It's I want this person to get help. My fear is that this person they'll find some way to evict this person. But they'll reach some sort of settlement where it's like, we won't report you to the police, but just please go.
Right.
And then that's the problem because then
you're putting it on somebody else.
Yeah. But it becomes a public safety situation. And so that's my fear. I'm very conscious of when people are made to feel small, whoever they are, that's when all bets are off. And that's when people are made to feel small, that's when they act with as much control and sense of authority and they want to seem mighty.
Right.
Would it help to write, cause he wrote on a note, I assume it didn't take the entire page. So there's a bullet. I have a bullet with everyone's name on it.
Yeah. Magnum 3-7 bullet.
Very specific.
Yeah.
Would it help to write, "Hey, we love you. We hope we don't die by your hands." Can you imagine reading that?
I mean, that's...
thanks. No one said.
You know?
That's a step towards that compassion. I mean, I know you're joking,
But I'm not. I wonder, like it. Because I wonder if it disrupts that. Because right now, all you're doing is sort of ignoring it and bringing in authority. But what if... And I'm not saying this is the cure, but what if we try that? Like, "Hey, we hope you don't do that. Can we help with something?" And I wonder if that disrupts the brain. I don't think so. I think there's like a trajectory that like... the average person can't necessarily just interrupt with different words, but hey, I don't know, what else is there to say?
Well, I believe everybody wants to feel heard and acknowledged. And so some version of that, of what you're saying is probably, I'm not saying that version, but like some version of it, like letting somebody feel like,
hey, is there something that we can do to not be shot with your, what kind of gun is it again?
Magnum 357.
Yeah. A Dirty Harry.
But going back real quick, when he is telling you for sympathy, of course, that he has this cancer.
Yeah.
Are you able to say, "Hey, what's going on with the fucking shooting the place up, bro?"
I haven't confronted him about it. I know that he's the one leaving these notes.
Does he deny it?
No one has confronted him about this because the notes are all anonymous, but we have found through very easy detective work that, oh, this is him.
Sure.
And he has, yeah. And so.
Also, another way of doing it is because it's anonymous, Keith, if you were that person, if I bump into you, I go, "I don't know, I'm really scared. I feel unsafe. I hope, that person finds peace before he really does that. Like, what do you think about it?"
You know what I would do? I'd make a photocopy of that letter and put it under his door and then go, "Are you getting these letters too?"
Well, I mean, it's weird. It's pretty clever. It's kind of been weird because like the Kate Spade news, when I read that, it actually really, it upset me. And a few weeks ago, somebody that I know had also committed suicide. And, when I hear a person like this man who is my neighbor, who's being very violent towards other people, I think this is not going to end well. And there's a very good chance he will, I think really, he's probably, I think the larger chance is that he hurts himself. And you could say, well, in some ways, maybe that's for the best because how can he get repaired? Right. But that's another thing. But it's sad. And I feel like there's been a lot of, I don't know, there's been like a lot of like death and suicide in my life in the past year. It's been weird. Just like it's been a lot of that energy.
And you got to look at what am I bringing into my life? What do all these have in common? You.
Right. It's the way
you up to.
It's the way that I'm dressed. Me walking down the alleyway in my mini skirt.
Can I just PSA here super quick? Because I do think there's a lot of suicide and suicidal thoughts, and there's a lot of anxiety in our culture, in our atmosphere right now. If you're feeling anything like that, and if you're feeling alone, if you're feeling like no one will understand what's happening,
then go on Twitter, because Jesus, they all have it.
There is a way out. If you can just take the tiniest step, go to a group meeting, an anonymous meeting, call a hotline, Google a hotline, you know, and anything, write to us just to say, like, I feel crazy. I know that you're not crazy. There's some kind of thing that can combat the negative feeling that you're feeling. And I don't know if we can help, then I want to. But somebody wants to help you, and there is a way out.
The people at the Suicide Prevention Hotline,
they suck sometimes. So that's why I'm not like super encouraging that. But,
oh, really?
But it is like a break in your thoughts. So they're not going to like repair your life, but it is worth calling just to interrupt your cycle that you're going through. Sorry, what were you going to say about it?
I was about to say they were great, and you were like, they suck.
I've called them, and I'm just like, hey, I'm in the worst place, and it feels like a little kid reading from like the next prompt. So right. I don't want to, you know, if you get one of those, even they mean well, and, you know, just let them listen to you cry, and, you know, don't expect like them to change your whole life. But if you just cry to someone, then you'll take that.
The goal of that service, those types of service, I think, is to talk you off a ledge, not to cure you. Cause you know, it just to take you one degree lower.
Yeah.
And usually just by listening, I think, just to diffuse, you know, whatever, but,
it's someone who's not going to tell your secret. So, and for some reason, our brain, it helps us to tell a secret out loud. Mm-hmm. So here's like a wailing wall that you can just speak it out loud, and it'll change the chemical of your brain for some reason. So if you could make that phone call, then do it, you know, it'll disrupt the negativity.
When I will say that's what the purpose of. I think that's one of the great things that a diary can do.
Yes.
And also drawing or whatever. Like, take your thoughts. Like, I've had a lot of people, actually, my dad, when he was alive, after my mom passed away, he was like, I said, you know, you should consider therapy. And he's, well, I don't need therapy. What am I, crazy? I'm not crazy. And I'm like, well, no, that's not just for, just good to get a thought out of your head. He's like, well, I know what my issues are. I've heard so many men, specifically men, say that. And it's like, well, that arrogance drives me crazy. It's like, you do and you don't. If you put it, just get the thought out of your,
that's step one, is
out of your skull, and put it on the page, or put it in conversation with somebody, because you just have to look at it and acknowledge it. And you start to see things from a slight distance. And that's what the thing gives you, the diary or the conversation can give you a little bit of that distance.
Right. And there's also 1,000 apps where you can reach out to people. I have one, it's called Sober Grid, and it's based mostly, you know, for people trying to be off alcohol. But I guarantee there's other things like this. If you're like, who do I know? Or I live in a small town and I'll be ostracized, where with Sober Grid, something will just pop and go, Jenny from Texas needs help now.
Oh, wow.
And you just, you know, you throw in something personal to Jenny. Jenny throws something personal back, and she's good for a day or two, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. So there's that's plenty of people out there. But yeah, 2018, look on the internet.
Yeah.
Don't act like you're alone. You're not alone.
There's this one, there's this app, and I don't know if I'm going to have it right, but it sounds really interesting. Xerxes had it. Hennessy had it for a minute, and it's people will call you to wake you up. So, and that's not my thing, because I don't want to talk to anyone first thing, but it's not necessarily you talking, but it's a strange, you could be calling, you know, Holland, and just going, hey, you're supposed to be awake now. And that person sometimes wants to chat with you, or sometimes that's all you did, but it's this way of communicating with people. There are so many silly ways. Find the silliest, most fun way for you, and just connect with people on a stupid level. It'll help.
And to remember that we're all messes, go to getmortified.com. The live show that performs all over the country. It's been going on for about 15 years now, right?
That's right. Mortified.
And on Netflix, you can get, what's the name of the movie?
On Netflix, you can get our movie, Mortified Nation, and our series, which is The Mortified Guide.
Right. And Mortified Guide right now, 1 season, 6 episodes. So you're not even overwhelmed. You know, it's like 6. I could take 6.
Very manageable.
Very manageable. I don't, if you're like, oh, that's what I need, more stress.
I'm not, if you want more stress, you can listen to our podcast, which has like 130 episodes.
Yes. Dave, way to sell it.
Yeah. Right. You can follow Dave on Twitter. Dave Nadelberg, Nadelberg. Of course, Instagram is the same, Dave Nadelberg, and the website, like I said, getmortified.com. This was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Have a great weekend.